Welcome to this week's episode of Straggler Adventures, where we introduce you to really cool people who do really cool things. We're not your parents' middle agers, reminding us that you don't have to be first to be the greatest, and it's never too late to live your best life.
Hey, welcome back to Straggler Adventures. Today, we have one of my favorite people in the whole world. We have Aguila, who's going to introduce herself and tell you all why she's here.
I was honored to be asked to be here with Lovely Self. I am presently, for the last 48 years, a belly dancer, teacher, instructor, performer, author.
Extraordinaire.
But I began my professional life as an accountant. You know, and I can just tell you that now I can count to eight without a calculator. And accounting was good to me, but dance has opened worlds to me. And I wouldn't take anything for this time I've spent.
So tell us a little bit about your background. And I'm so excited to hear from you. For the listeners who don't know, I took belly dancing under Aguila. It was an incredible experience, very welcoming to all folks, which is so important. And so I'm just really excited to hear and share her story about her history of belly dance. I'm very much a baby belly dancer. And what I love most about belly dance is that you never had to worry about if you were good enough. Because first of all, none of us are ever going to be as good as Aguila. She is top tier. But she never made you feel that way. I love belly dance. I love the movement and how it celebrates the body and it celebrates all bodies. Having belly dance was a place that you just go and be celebrated. Did not take long before I was dancing in belly shirts, which is something I never, ever would have put on a bingo card for my lifetime. But just having a place that's so comfortable, a very rare space, where you get to celebrate who you are inside and out, not despite of who you are, but because of who you are celebrated. With all of that said, that is what your studio has given to me that I've loved. And I wish I could have taken the whole studio with me to Michigan, because you created this community of love and acceptance.
That is exactly what we wanted to create. It's the way we created my studio when I was in Atlanta. I started out. I'm a Southern girl. I do not have an accent. And I have...
I don't know how many times I've made fun of your accent because I love it so much.
It's okay. My Egyptian friends say I speak Arabic with a drawl. I'm not sure how they know what a drawl is, but anyway. So I'm a Southern girl. I came up in a really strict conservative home. I was not allowed to take dance classes when I was growing up. I had a burning desire to do it. Somewhere along in there, I had an interest in theater, but these were not acceptable, you know, options to explore. At the ripe old age of 30, was by then a single mom. My two dearest friends were also single moms. And when we decided we were going to quit smoking. Okay, this is back in the 70s, all right, late 70s. We agreed that we would sign up for the first thing we found, whatever movement program, to counteract the what if we ate our way through this whole process. You
know? Right. I quit smoking and gained 20 pounds.
Yes, exactly. Just thinking, and so it was, we just agreed, okay, whoever finds something first, we'll all sign up for it, okay? So one Wednesday night, we had a call from one of the girls and said, hey, I signed us up for belly dance. And we went, what? What's that? Well, I don't know, but they're offering it at the clubhouse and it's on Wednesday night. So we hired one sitter to keep all the kids on a Wednesday night and we took off to belly dance class. I just have to tell you, at the time it was very Greek and Turkish influenced and I fell in love with it. I just, something about the music just was energizing and you could walk in that space and feel like you were no longer the accountant. You weren't doing tax returns, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay. Debit credit was not involved. And it was amazing. You know, you just felt like you stepped into this other world. And in Atlanta at that time, we had a huge Greek community, a lot of Greek nightclubs. And I remember going there one night with the class. We had a little adventure outing. We had dinner at this Greek place and they had live music. And one of the musicians pulled me up to dance and first just froze. And then I got transported in my mind somewhere and I thought I would not come down and land on Earth again for at least a month. I was just overcome with it. And it didn't feel like work. It felt easy. And the music just took wherever you wanted to go. The music was taking you there. Forward a few years, I was the only one of the three of us who stayed with it, but I did dance at the wedding of one of my friends a number of years later. And then I went on an arts exchange program to Egypt. And there were 45 dancers from the U.S. who were invited, and I was one of them. We went to study there with their choreographers, you know, their Middle Eastern dance artists, and see the sights. I was totally enamored with the Arab culture. It kind of spoke to every, you know, storybook concept I ever had back in my mind, you know, Alibaba, Aladdin, all the characters. And it just felt like that exotic land, I guess you would say, that full of imagination, whatever you can imagine. I loved it. And the next year, 15 of us were invited back for the same program. On that trip, I met some people who had become very influential in my dance career. At the time, I was just in love with it. I met a lady in the Casablanca airport about 4 o'clock in the morning, and she said, "Where are all of you going?" You know, we were all dressed very conservatively, and she was an Egyptian woman, and she said, why are you dressed so, you know, you're young, why don't you dress like Americans dress?" And it was no, because we were told we were coming to this country and it's very conservative and we have to be respectful. And yeah, well, okay, she said, "When you get there, get rid of that." So she said, "And here's my card, call me and we'll have tea." And I said, "Yes, ma'am," because this is what a dutiful Southern girl does. "Yes, ma'am." We were in Cairo and probably in the second week of our experience there. And I felt guilty because I hadn't called her Southern girl again. So I thought, well, I'll just call and make excuses. And she was so delighted to hear from us. And nothing would do, but she was sending her son to pick me and my two friends up. We would have tea and, you know, on and on and on. Well, her husband, as it turned out, was chairman of Egypt Air. So yeah, she was a German woman married to this Egyptian man. Wonderful, I mean, beautiful part of the city. So welcoming, so inviting. And here we are, we're three strangers to her, you know, and they just opened their home. And we had the best evening. And that set off another set of adventures. The next year, she said, "Come to my daughter's wedding and dance for us." And I went, well, you know, it was going to be at the Sheraton in this very, you know, she part of the city. And the opening act for me was a dancing horse. I'm just going to tell you, it's a little hard to follow a dancing horse, you know, who literally they brought him into the ballroom at the Sheraton. You know? And I thought, okay, this is an opening act. But while I was there visiting her, I decided I was going to look up one of the teachers that we had in our workshops on the arts exchange program. And I had his business card, and I don't know whether I was brazen or naive or a touch of both, but I simply took the card, got a taxi, found his studio, and rang the doorbell. And I said, "Hi, my name is Aguila, and I want to take classes with you." Well, he was like the biggest name in Egyptian dance history, okay? Still is, Mahmoud Reda. And now I think, how could you? You just walked right up there and rang the doorbell. And he said, "Well, come in." It was kind of the beginning of this wonderful friendship. Maybe he was taken aback that this American would just ring his doorbell and assume that she could take classes with him. But he did. He said, "Come back tomorrow." And I did. And another beginning of a great friendship, which is going to be one of the greatest influences, I think, in my adult life. He was hugely famous, a household word, one of the most humble, modest people I've ever met in my life. So talented. I was by then dancing in nightclubs in Atlanta. I went back to visit again and to study with him again. I took my friends one night to this nightclub. I wanted to see a particular dancer. Of course, nothing starts until 11 o'clock, okay, at night. nightclub was packed, and I just wanted to, you know, my friends had not been to a nightclub because it was very expensive to go there then, and this is my treat. They got me up to dance because I was the only non-Arab in the place. Okay, I got red hair. I'm short. I do not look Egyptian. Mm-hmm. Maybe Irish if you stretch it a little bit. Certainly not Egyptian, you know? They were singing this little song, the singer, you know, her hair is not like us. Her nose is not like us. She's, her skin, it's not like us, you know? And they said, okay. So the singer says, I'm going to teach you to dance like us. So this is like a whole comedy shtick. So he went through his motions and he said, now you do it. And I did it. And then he went through more and I did it. And he said, okay, now you dance. And the orchestra played and I danced. And it was sounding like a freight train coming through there. People were like amazed. The manager came running out from his office because he heard the noise and he thought there was a fight in the nightclub. Someone said to him, you know, Monsieur, you have to see her. She's a white girl and she dances like us. That night I left with a contract.
That's amazing.
They brought us back to his office, offered us tea. He spoke no English. I spoke little Arabic. They brought a housekeeper in who did speak English somewhat. And he said, tell me, write down what you want. I had no idea, you know, so I'm just making up stuff. And he said, okay, come tomorrow and we'll sign the contract. And I thought, yeah, really. The next day at the appointed time, they sent a driver to pick us up, me and my two friends, and brought us to his office and we signed the contract. And I was to open 3 nights after Ramadan ended their big annual fasting. And I said, okay, sure. Not believing this would ever happen. This is Cinderella now. This is in the days when airline tickets were actually written, you know, and mailed. They arrived in the mail and they would call and say, Madame, you are coming, right? And I go, yeah, sure. yeah, I can do that. I was going to be gone for 6 weeks. Now, this was good, except that I had just started my own accounting practice the month before. How do you start a business and go away for 6 weeks? Sure, but still telling myself, this is not going to happen. Why would I hire this girl from Stone Mountain, Georgia to come over there? You know, that's like taking sand to the beach. I mean, they got a bunch of them over there. They don't need one more. And I just figured, well, this is really, it's not going to happen. The ticket will be canceled, whatever, whatever. And, you know, sometimes things just fall on your plate in life and you know you're going to just run with it because the opportunity may not ever come again. I said, okay, I can wait 6 more weeks to start my business. And it was one of the most amazing experiences I had in my life. I would not take anything. No amount of money could replace those experiences. I remember opening night, I stood there and cried on stage thinking, I'm doing their dance in their country. Does it get any better? You know, it's like, I was very shy until then. Nobody believes that now. I get it. Okay.
But no, I do not receive that. I do not receive that.
I was painfully shy. I hoped if I walked into a room that nobody would talk to me because I didn't want to have to make conversation. I had no self-esteem. I struggled with self-esteem all my life. It hit me in that moment when the orchestra played and I came out and the place went nuts. I think I've made it. You know, I think I'm on the mountain here. Does it get any better? And the people were so incredibly welcoming. It was a novelty for them. There were billboards going, here's this, you know, the bride of Oriental dance, they called me and she's, you know, it was all about, I was the first non-Arab to work in that city. The hotel had gone to a lot of trouble, yet I had to have a license as a foreigner to work in Egypt. Then I had to have a license to work in that particular city. Then I had to have another license to work in that particular nightclub. I had to have a male adult sign that he would be responsible for any of my behavior. Right?
Oh, geez. Okay. What year was this, Aguila?
This was 1985.
Wow.
And I couldn't even sign my own contract. We had to have a male representative who said, I will be responsible for her actions, sign the contract. Okay. So this was like something back in the 50s in the States, you know, to me. But they were amazing. I had security guards and they did go with me everywhere, except one time I didn't understand they were supposed to go with me everywhere and I left. they were just amazing. This was a novelty to them. So the hotel was packed every night. It was a nightclub in a 5-star hotel. It was packed every night to come see the foreigner. I learned so much. Like, I had studied Arabic before I went over there. In those few months, I hired a tutor. How could I go to their country and not speak their language? The musicians spoke no English whatsoever. And yet they were all so protective and so, so supportive and so proud that they had this white girl. And the term white girl means it's not a racial thing, but it means that you are not Arab, but you understand their culture and you speak their language. It was a huge thing. People would pay me just to show up at a party, to walk in and stay for an hour. And then they could say, we had the American, you know, she was here. I did a wedding for two Saudi brothers who married two Saudi sisters. And it was televised and it was in the King's Palace in Alexandria. I took my whole entourage with me. It was an amazing experience. There were difficulties. There were challenges. Sometimes you couldn't go anywhere without crowd gathering. So my security guards were pulling their hair out, I'm sure, because the first time I didn't understand I was supposed to tell them where I was going. So I just left the hotel and I went shopping and I was gone for hours. I got lost. Couldn't find my way back to the hotel. It's only the second day, right? So I found these three young children and a donkey. They were wandering around and the little girl recognized me and she pointed to the billboard and she said, Madame, this is you. And I said, yes, yeah, it is. And she said, okay, come. I said, can you tell me where is my hotel? Yes, okay, come. So we had kind of covered a lot of ground. We were a distance from the hotel. And so I stopped and I bought ice cream for the three kids and we bought one for the donkey. So we were feeding the donkey the ice cream. And as we got to the hotel, all these police had all the streets shut down. The army was out and everybody, you know, they had their like Uzis and their AK-47s and whatever. And I'm going, oh my gosh, this is terrible. I heard someone say, she's here, she's here. There we stood, the four of us and the donkey outside the front door of the hotel. They had called the police out and the police called the military out. They'd been looking for me all afternoon. And the manager, the veins in his neck were standing out. His face was red. And he said with great control, Clintifane, you know, Madame, where did you go? I went, look, I went shopping and I bought this fabric and I had this and this. And it was through gritted teeth, you know, Madame, please, never again. You must tell Hamid, you must tell Sabir if you go. So after that, there was always a security guard outside my hotel door and another one at the front door of the hotel. Okay, it was in addition to the regular security, but there was one to watch for me, so I didn't get away from them. There was a lot of love in that. I'm sure he was probably, he wanted to strangle me, but he didn't. And there was kindness and compassion, and the hotel people with 4th of July, they did a big mound of ice cream and put American flags in it. And to say, Madame, I know this is your holiday. It's so good. And I can't ever recall being treated with greater love. Yeah. And
troublemaker way back then. I feel a little bit less guilty about the trouble I've caused for your causes, knowing that you were the OG troublemaker.
We had a problem once. I wanted to go to the beach because the beach in Alexandria is a resort city. And the rich Saudis have summer homes there. So they come over from Saudi and they party hardy because they can drink, smoke, gamble, whatever. The tourist is just jammed with tourists, European tourists. But I wanted to go to the beach. And so I said to my guards, okay, today we're going to the beach. He said, okay, madam, but you must cover. You have to, like, because the Egyptian women would go to the beach in their dresses. You know, they're standing in the water ankle deep, but in their dresses. So I wore a long shirt over my swimsuit, you know, came down to my knees. And as soon as we got there, I said, okay, I'm going in the water. And they rolled up their pants legs. They're in these three-piece suits, right? It's 112 degrees outside. And they said, okay, you go out. I was ankle deep. And they said, sit, madame. And they timed it with their watches. 5 minutes. You can be in the water. And then they said, okay, madame, you're finished. as I stood up, I thought, this is not exactly what I had in mind. And as I stood up, some woman recognized me and came running over with her baby and wanted me to hold her baby and take a picture with her. And then it started this huge stampede because somebody said, oh, it's the dancer, you know, Arus Oriental. It made a big problem. So they hurried me off the beach. And the next day I said, but can I go to another beach now? No, madame, because you make big problems. But we will manage. So on the rooftop hotel of the hotel, they laid out a big towel and they brought me a little cooler with 7-Up and water. And they brought me an umbrella to hold and a garden hose to run the water. And they said, madame, now you have a private beach. That was the only other, that's the only time I got to the beach after that. Maybe I made a little problem.
Probably. Yeah. So you've been on the cover of magazines,
yeah,
and you have a special title. What is the special title that you have?
The title that you're referring to is actually a license I was awarded when I was working there, because part of the thing is, in the first week that a new artist is working in a hotel, the Ministry of Culture will send a representative unannounced. We call them the culture police. They make sure that you're not doing anything improper on stage, that you're not being unladylike, that you're not putting a knee on the stage or starting your hip circles to the front instead of the side, you know, very strict rules, because they'll take you to jail for these things and you can lose your license. And you never know when they're coming. You know, you don't know if they were there and they left. Apparently they
came. Hold on, hold on. You could get arrested for starting your hip circles to the front instead of the side.
Yeah, it keeps a lot of people employed. Right. Right. And they're ever changing them. Right. So, for instance, we could not dance with bare bellies. We had to have our midsection covered. And so we did that by using fishnet. You could still see the movement or some lightweight fabric, but you were covered. Okay. Because you're not supposed to show yourself. And they checked to see that your costuming was appropriate and, you know, yada, yada, yada. So I don't know when they came, but a few days, probably toward the end of my first week, I had the manager came to me and said, we have to go to the government office. And I went, oh, my God, you know, what did I do? What, you know, and they said, no, this is very important, madame. And he made this big ceremony of saying to me, the Minister of Culture, madame, we give you this license. So it is good for your lifetime. Means you can dance anywhere in Egypt, any city, any nightclub, anywhere you want, as long as you live and hold a valid passport. And he said, "Only you are only the number 11 to receive this." So it was a huge honor. It's a lifetime, you know, license. And now they don't give that anymore. But there were only 11 of us that were awarded this, and I was one of them. So that was a pretty big deal for a foreigner.
That's a huge deal.
It's a huge deal. Yeah.
That's a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, the magazine you were referring to is called Zagarit. And I was pretty proud of that because it was, in 2016? I was on the cover of it and I was, you know, like 66 years old at the time. Yeah. So I thought, well, took me a long time to get there, but I made it. So that was important to me, that to be honored by your own colleagues, because, you know, sometimes in any art form, the further away you go from home, the more credibility you have and the more people celebrate your achievements. Sometimes when we're within our own circles in the artist community, you know, it's a little more competitive and we don't always receive that kind of support. It's important, which was kind of another underlying issue for me with having a studio. I wanted everyone who walked in my door to feel like whoever they are and whatever their body type and whatever their age, you know, we're all walking around with the right equipment to do this. And in the Middle East, they celebrate the differences. You know, no one is judged going, oh, she's too tall or too short. you know, she's too chronologically mature, she's too young. They thought I was a little bit too young, okay, because I look younger than my age. But she, they would come up to me when I was like 35 and they said, where's your mother? Where's your father? I went, I don't know. And they thought I was there being unsupervised. I said, no, I'm old, you know. But I wanted people to feel, to experience in my studios what I had felt when I was in their country. You know, I felt welcomed. I felt I was never judged. I was celebrated. I was different. If you said you have to be 5'8 and have dark hair and be rail thin and all to be a belly dancer, I never would have made it. I'm 5'1. I have red hair. I'm short. I'm round, you know, but they loved me anyway. And this is what I want in my studio, is that people, whoever walks in there, knows they're in a safe environment and that they're walking around with all the right equipment and they're the right age and the right height and the right body to do the dance. Okay.
So, and you have been extremely successful in that. When I got connected to your studio because one of your instructors went to high school with a friend of mine. And my friend said, hey, there's, you know, a belly dance and they're having a 3-week introduction course. Will you come with me? Because I want to go and I'm scared to go by myself, but I know that you'll do anything, because anybody who knows me knows that I'm that person who's like, yeah, what are we doing today? And I showed up, fell in love with it. She didn't even go to all three and was like, this is not for me. And I went, I found my people. And here I am, how many years later, with more belly dance clothes than I like to admit. And did I go to class with my arm in a swing after shoulder surgery? Yes. Yes, I did. Yes. Have I gone to class and went, I can't move my hip today? Yes, I have. Because you just show up as your authentic self. You do what you can. There is no judgment. It is just everything that you wanted to create, you have done that. Northwest Ohio is so insanely lucky to have you in your studio and your instructors. Every single person that comes through the door, there's not been one person that gave me any second thought, because you have not just, you don't just have a studio of you, you have a studio of a community that is so beautiful. Lifelong friends that I have found there, because you're not, people who are showing up there are also like-minded. That's what you've created.
Thank you. That means the world to me.
Also, I would like you to move up near Detroit.
This was something that was unique to our studio in Atlanta as well. Because remember, all this time I was working in Egypt, I was back and forth. I was in Atlanta for the first part of it. And didn't come to Toledo. Actually, it was 2005. I came to Michigan in 2001. I lived there for a few years. But I'm very, very proud of the fact that when people walk in our studio, they can feel safe, that nobody is going to judge them for hair color or body type or whatever. And, you know, people say, can I do it? Because, you know, I'm old. I'm going, no, you're not. You're just chronologically mature, you know. But to give you an example, in Egypt, they love older women. They think women are not really sexy until they're at least in their 50s. Okay. I love their attitude. And secondly, they like rounded women. They would say, oh, she's skinny enough for the Americans. That is not a good thing. And the younger women there were never concerned about another young woman taking their boyfriend or whatever, but they were terribly, they'd break out in a sweat. If I was like 50 or 60, they're going, oh, because as men think, she's lived long enough to have soul, you know, and they love that. So they're not just looking for they're not an outer layer pretty. It's nice. But one of the things they will say is, oh, my God, she dances from her heart, not from her hip. You know, it's huge with them. They're looking for someone who has the passion, who's feels open enough to express herself, what, you know, what she's feeling when she's dancing, and not just there for acknowledgement or money, because they think anyone, you know, it's trashy if she's dancing for money or she's just wants attention, you know. And I think it's what sets apart. I think there are thousands of other dancers better than me. Okay. I feel like I'm a really good teacher, but I feel like there's, you know, there's always going to be somebody who's better than we are. But I feel like I have soul, I have passion for it, you know, and it comes across, I hope, when I dance.
It does.
It yeah. definitely does.
It Thank does. You. Thank you. And the, you know, the younger men are, they are totally intrigued. And I'd go, okay, first of all, we're not even thinking about going home to visit your parents, you know, probably graduated the year you were born, but that's okay. So, it matters to me that people walk into our studio and we can close the door and they can be whoever they feel like they are, you know, whoever that person is inside of them that's waiting to get out. It's a great place to do it. Yeah.
What inspires you to keep going and keep teaching and keep doing all of this when it's hard? What inspires you to keep going? Or when you have pain in the ass students like me? I'm not kidding, okay? Look, I'm a performer. I'm a theater girl. But this you know. Is so far out of my realm. And it put me in such a uncomfortable place in the best way possible. But also, I know that I make jokes at the worst times all the time.
Me too.
Unapologetically. When things get tough, just in general, you never stop. You always show up with this safe space. What inspires you to keep going?
Well, I'm afraid if I stop, it won't get started again. But I live here in Toledo. I have no family here. Okay. No family even close. We're all scattered across the U.S. And it's me. And what keeps me here is my studio. Because the people I meet in it, everyone has touched my life and left a mark in a different way. But that's what I have. That's what keeps me here. And maybe in Detroit one day. I think I need I need that opportunity to watch people become who they are, who better than who they think they could be. You know, I've watched people, a young girl who I met in Michigan, and she emailed me and said, I have some physical disabilities, but I read that you did an occupational therapy program for dancers. I said, yeah, using dance. And she said, I want you to help me. I said, okay. So she showed up at my house. I lived in a two-story house. My rehearsal room was upstairs. She had no movement on one side of her body. She was 29 years old, had a massive stroke from a drug interaction. And she said, I want you to help me walk across the stage when I get my degree from Hillsdale. I said, come on in. And we pushed, I thought she'll, you know, couldn't get up the steps. So we just pushed the dining room table aside. And we started, it was an effort just to get the arm that was at that time quasi-paralyzed to move a little bit. And she walked, she had a brace on her leg. And we walked. And we walked, you know. Fast forward, I went to her graduation and I stood with her parents and she said, I'm going to walk across the stage. I'm going to wear real people's shoes and you're going to get me there. So she got out of her wheelchair when it was her turn to go up the line, and there was a steep bank of steps, sort of like 10 steps maybe up and across the platform and then down the other side. And she walked and she wore cute shoes, you know, little heel. And she said, I heard in my mind, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's right. It's left. It's right. It's left. She got all the way up the steps, across, took her diploma and down the other side. I don't think I've ever been so proud of anyone for working so hard just to walk, and that I had the opportunity to help her do that. So it's amazing what people can do if someone believes in them. And if you learn to do in my studio, I hope you learn to dance. That's my job. But if you don't, I want you to learn to like the person looking back at you in the mirror. I want you to come to understand that if you can learn to do one new thing that night, maybe it's a step, maybe it's a hip movement, posture, one thing, then you'll believe that you can do two things and you can do three things. And there's no limit except what you put on yourself. That's what I want to leave here. And when I run out of those opportunities, maybe then it's time for me to go. But right now, I still see opportunities.
It's very cool. Like I'm firmly behind that. Like the ability to take the next steps and to like kind of, you know, learn something new. If you don't keep learning, you're not growing. You're not moving forward in some ways. That's unbelievable. Like I spent a little bit of time in the hospital. I spent a few days in a coma, and like helping you saying like that person just learning to walk again, or like getting across the stage. It was a goal. It's an amazing process when you have to set your mind to something that's that difficult. And for you to be a part of it and be emotionally attached, that had to be such a great moment for you to see after all the other stuff that you've done and, you know, the travels and the accolades. That had to mean so much to you to watch that happen, standing there with her parents and being like, that's awesome. And she did it, and she did what she wanted to. Achieving goals is so cool. It's so, so cool.
It is. You're right, Dave. But how many times do people encourage you to do that?
It's very little. Like you have to either encourage yourself or find somebody like you who will be there when you need the encouragement. Because all the time you don't always need it. But when you hit that difficult spot, because I'm sure that wasn't easy for the two of you to get to
no.
That. But she kept coming back and you kept moving forward when you could. And the encouragement you gave her to push through is amazing. I know at times I need that encouragement from, whether it's from Shauna or whether it's from other outside influences. Sometimes you just need that kick in the butt to be like, hey, you got this. I'm not going to let you fail. But you have this all by yourself when you need it. It's there. I see it. Because we all get down a little bit, and if you could bring it back, it's amazing. I think the stories behind this, it's amazing. I mean, besides your time in Egypt, which is crazy to me, that's so awesome that your travels are great. That story is unreal to me. It really hits me on that one.
Sometimes you need an outside voice to be louder than your inside voice. Because it's almost like we're raised to be self-deprecating and don't be too braggadocious. Don't be too much. Don't be too loud and proud of yourself. Those inside voices and the outside voices that we've internalized, because it's so easy to listen to somebody else's negative perception of you and internalize that. So there's so many reasons that we have this negative self-talk. And sometimes just having somebody who is on the outside that could be louder than our inside voices until we can change our inside voice. And that's what you do. Sure. You are that loud outside voice convincing me that that is my truth and not these inside voices that I listen to the other 23 hours a day.
Absolutely. So, thank you. Yeah.
And so if that positive talk comes through as right, left, it's not just right, left. It's everything that's behind that. It's just, this is why I love you. This is why you're here, Aguila. This is why.
Thank you.
So
I feel like, yeah. I've been given so many opportunities. If I can share one more that had a huge impact on, because I've taught classes for blind, I've taught classes for hearing impaired. But I did an occupational therapy program. They came to me and asked me if I could do a belly dance program for women learning to regain range of motion. I went, sure. Whew, okay. And they would come once a week with their therapist, the patient and the therapist. And they maybe had wedges under their heels, or they had to learn to just stand up straight. And one of the most profound experiences too was a woman, we'll just call her Jane, who she and her husband were hit head on as they left their wedding. And she was in the hospital for 18 months, learning to walk again, talk again, everything. And she was one of my students. And when we filmed them on the first night, and then we filmed them 8 weeks later at the end of the program, and I didn't even realize what changes were about. And then we presented this to the North Georgia Occupational Therapy Association. And they asked her a lot of questions, and she said it was hard, but she said, you know what? After going through all of this and all of this healing, she said, I was probably the only person on my street that could belly dance, you know? And she said, and I felt like a woman again after 18 months of hospitals and therapists. And sometimes somebody just has to tell you that you can. They have to make you believe that you can. And I don't think I'll ever forget that experience of hearing her say, I felt feminine again. Wow. And can you imagine on your wedding night how, I mean, that's just like all the glitz, all the glamour, all the fairy tale you ever wanted. And to lose that and have to start from the very beginning, you know? Yeah. I hope if I'm ever in that situation, I have that fortitude.
Ah, and we all have the choice to be somebody's voice that makes them feel more beautiful and gives them the option, telling them they can, or we have the option to tell them they can't.
Exactly.
And we need more people like you to tell people they can, whatever it is they can. They can.
Thank you. Okay. But I feel honored they even chose me. They trusted me enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
To get them through it, both of them. So.
So if somebody is listening to this, which I hope everybody listens to this and falls in love with you as much as I have, if somebody's listening to this and is interested in getting into belly dance, what are some advice for you, what they can do if they're in the Toledo area, what they can do to join your studio? Give us a little bit of background. Obviously, I was just kind of jumped into it. And I will say you don't have to go in with belly dance clothes. That will come later. You will buy that all on your own later. Do not think you can't join belly dance because you don't have the clothes. I promise you, your wardrobe will grow.
You have all the equipment you need. You don't need any other dance training at all. No other movement training. You just have to sign up and show up and agree to have fun while you're doing it. Because if you're not interested in having fun, we're really not your place. Okay. If you want somebody to put you down and, you know, badger you into doing better, don't come because you won't get that. So we are all about a safe space to try something new. And no, it's not going to take away from your life, but it could totally enhance you in ways you never expected. I never thought I would have lived in Egypt and worked or been on the cover of a magazine or, you know, been written about in a book or any of these things. I was just going to quit smoking. I did. Go to www.aegela.com and come dance with us. We're waiting on you.
I will link that in our description everywhere we post this, because I do not mince words, and I do not recommend places that I don't fully 100% believe in. I never have. And I cannot recommend this dance studio enough. I did not have you here to advertise your studio, but I want people to know that that is a place if they're in Toledo and are interested. Or find a place in your area. Or start one in Detroit.
You know, if you're not in the Toledo area and you're hearing this, I do know a few people around the world. So probably whatever state you're in, I can, you know, we can connect you with someone. Take the opportunity to find out how beautiful you are. Thank you for believing in me enough to have me on your podcast.
For as quiet as I was, which I've been told I'm not quiet by people, it was very good. I loved it. It was very inspirational. Like I said, coming from a background where I spent a little bit of time in a hospital, like it was very inspirational. It makes you feel everything you need to inside of this. You inspire people to move. And even if it's not a movement that I'm doing, it's just the movement in and of itself. It's the find the thing that is you and be you and do it and don't look back.
it's just the vehicle to success. I just want it to be a way for them to become successful, whether it's in dance or any other area. So you get it, though. It's hard when you're going through a long recovery process like you must have, and to keep doing it and keep believing that you can do it.
Yeah, it takes a little mental fortitude. And the fact that there's people out there like you who can inspire and change people's mindsets in that way, it's inspiring to me. And to I hope everybody who's listening to this.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.